Hello and welcome to Rewatchable episode number 333. Today we're talking Pitch season one, episode five, Alfonso Guzman Chavez. I'm Danielle and I will be your host today. And before we jump into anything, I want to let you know that we love hearing from you. So please get in contact with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable or you can come find us on Facebook and join our Facebook group. We're on Facebook at Rewatchables Rewinders. And we would love to have you join our group. As I mentioned, I'm Danielle and I will be your host today. And I am joined by four of my lovely co-hosts. We have Natalie, Ariana, and Kendra. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
At the top of every episode, we like to do fun facts to get everyone used to our voices. Today is no different. So let's kick off our fun facts with Kendra. Kendra, do you have a fun fact for us today?
Sure. Mine's kind of a future fun fact. So tomorrow, me and a group of 12 largely unsuspecting individuals will embark on the one-day GISH, which stands for Greatest International Scavenger Hunt, which is something that both Natalie and I have participated in the past. It's usually for 1 week in the summer. It's put on by Misha Collins of Supernatural for his Random Acts of Kindness charity. And it's just like a list of 200 crazy things that you have to complete in 1 week. It's pretty intense. And they're doing a one-day version because everyone's quarantined and looking for stuff to do. And because everyone's looking for stuff to do, I was able to get people to say yes that would never ever say yes usually.
Really?
So it's gonna be
that's
interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah. I assume it won't be 200, but I am concerned for you and what they're going to try and do. I know it's a family friendly one, like usually there's a lower age limit of being like 14 or 16 or something, because there's like they ask some pretty weird things. And this one's meant to be, you know, like a designed for inside quarantine and for whole families, or like connecting, I guess, remotely with people in the community. And it's the signups are like fundraising for the COVID support. Full disclosure, I volunteer for the charity that Kendra just mentioned. So we have affiliates here. But it is... I'm curious to see what they do for it.
So I know. It'll be interesting to see what they
hopefully come up with. Have you got like weird people on your team, like your mother or something like that? Like, is it like
no? Just friends. Like, I tried to pick friends who had like different skill sets. Like, there's some artsy people and then some like smart people. So they should be good at it if they like don't get too overwhelmed. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I didn't just fill it with like people who were just going to be like, what's a computer? So it'll be interesting. So that's for 24 hours starting tomorrow. So I will be locked into the hunt for that time.
That sounds like so much fun. Please keep us updated with how it goes. And can I follow along on social media while you do things? It's going to be that kind of...
You're not allowed, unless there's like specific things that it's like, post this on social media. Otherwise, you're not allowed to post things on social media until after the hunt. But after, I'm sure I'll have some updates.
Interesting. Okay. I will look forward to those. Thank you. Natalie, what is your fun fact for the week?
I don't have one because I've been ordered to share Britney's, as she was meant to be on this pod. Not ordered, I suggested it, but she also told me the story in advance so that this could be possible. Britney was meant to be on the podcast tonight as well, and is caught up with work. So my fun fact this week is for her, and it is that last night, Thursday night, she was played a starring role in the Will and Grace series finale retrospective special. So Britney, as we all know, she wasn't like in the episode, but they did like, you know how like of some shows when they're having a finale, they have like a retrospective of like what the show meant to people, and you know, like making a documentary episode like as part of their final run. So Will and Grace finished last night for good, allegedly. Maybe they'll reboot again in 10 years. But they aired a normal episode and then a retrospective. And earlier in the year, in January, Brittany, that they put out a call, like, saying, you know, if you're a big fan, like, send us a little video of, like, what the show's meant to you, and you know, we're going to be putting something together for the final season. And she basically submitted a video. She wasn't planning to. There was a call out by the cast for video submissions, talk about the show, what it's meant to you over the years, and she wasn't going to do it, allegedly, until but the final day for submissions was while she was on a trip, one of her work trips down to Miami, and she kind of knew in the back of her mind that she would be doing it. So she packed, like, one of her Will and Grace fan shirts on the off chance that she'd film something, and she did, and she says it was, like, awful and cheesy, but she sent it in, and then a month ago she got an email back from producers to sign a release saying, can we use a bit of your video? And didn't know what part of the clip would be used, and they kind of trimmed down her saying something, and it's, like, in a very odd place. It's like, I haven't seen the special, but she told me it's not, like, placed in the portion of the episode that's, like, a montage of people's submissions. She comes directly after Joe Biden in the special. So it's, like,
oh my God.
Really, really weird. She is, like, one of the, I would say, like, if you had to, like, act, you know how, like, it's all very well and good to say, like, oh, I'm the biggest fan of something that there's ever been. I think that if you actually sat down and actually, like, did some sort of qualifying ranking, I think that Brittany would be in, like, one of the world's top 10 Will and Grace fans. Like, she is.
Oh, for sure.
Like if you actually had to qualify it in the way, you know, oh, I'm your biggest fan. No. Legitimately, she is. And it's been her whole life, like, since she was in high school, like 13, 14 or something. I think the show finished the first time when she was 16, or so she was even younger when she first started seeing it. You know, like, she's dedicatedly passionate. And I guess that came across in her video clip because they chose to use it in the special. So if you're able to catch up on the NBC finale special for Will and Grace, you'll see Brittany of Rewatchable in the special being dedicated to the love of her life. And it's over now. And she says this year's finale was a million times better than the finale when they ended the first time that they had to retcon when they brought the show back. So that is my fun fact. My fun fact is... that little bit of reporting for our friend Brittany. And yeah, it's very, very exciting, I think. She looks very cute in the video. It just says Brittany from Bordentown in New Jersey, which is, so if you watch it, that's her. If you don't know what she looks like, that's Brittany. Yay for her.
That's so wonderful. I saw like a boomerang of it in her Instagram story.
Mm.
And I was very confused and I wanted to ask her about it tonight. So I'm so glad that you took one for the team and gave her update.
I asked her and she was like, I'll tell you, but you have to pretend that you didn't hear it when I tell it on Rewatchable tomorrow, because obviously it's going to be my fun fact. And then when she couldn't do it, I was like, do you want me to tell it for you? So it's much better than anything I would have had to tell. So there you go.
Yes, because all of the, like, super cool fun facts should always be told on Rewatchable.
Yeah.
So
I'm glad I got the inside scoop in advance so that I could recount it and read out the things that she told me. She's so funny. She's so obsessive about this show. It's very, very nice.
She is. Yeah. I've never met anyone who's obsessed with Will and Grace like she is. And even better, she's probably cringing right now because I think she's going to be listening and editing this week. So
yeah.
Yay, Brittany.
Okay.
All right.
I think she skipped out after, I will just say,
yeah,
I think that she skipped out on this episode, not because of work. I think it was a lie. I think she didn't want to answer my questions about baseball trading.
I mean, that's probably very fair. I'm feeling inadequate right now. We're going to see what happens.
I don't even know if she knows the answers, but I presume she knows them very well for football because she plays fantasy football. So
yes,
I assume there's some comparison. We'll do our best.
We'll make do for sure. But before we get there, Ariana, your fun fact for this week, please.
Gosh, I don't think I have one now because I'm fairly certain I don't love anything in the world as much as Brittany loves Will and Grace. Like, I had a chicken taco before coming here tonight. Like, is that fun for you?
Yeah, I mean, we've all, you know, it's all a matter of perspective, isn't it?
I like it.
How was it? Did you buy it from outside the house or did you make it?
No, my uncle brought the chicken over because he made it rotisserie style. He took vacation time right now, obviously like weeks ago. And so now he has had nothing to do today. So he
rotisserie'd some chickens.
Yeah.
It sounds delicious. Thank you for sharing that. I'm very jealous.
What toppings did you put on it?
So my favorite salsa is guacamole salsa. It's super inauthentic,
guacamole salsa.
It's green and it doesn't look or taste like guacamole, but it's green and it's a little spicy. It's good.
Has it got real avocado or real tomato in it?
For sure, no.
Okay. Sure.
Really solid it here. But no, that does sound delicious though. And I guess my fun fact for the week is that I'm not sure if she's still growing or if this is how she's going to be forever, but like my cat can't really jump on anything. Have you ever seen those YouTube videos of cats trying to jump on things and then they kind of really wipe out or fall short or run into the side of furniture? That is my cat. She runs into the side of my bed or just like falls off, and it's very entertaining to watch. And I feel like a terrible person, but she's so cute.
Does she have like a balance problem or like?
I have no idea. And the funny thing is she likes climbing things. And so I bought her a tree because I'm working in my bedroom all day long and she's in here with me and I don't want her to be bored. And when I do have to eventually go back to work, like I want her to have something to do or climb on or sit in the window or whatever. And I was like, oh, well, she likes hiding and things or like whatever. So I got one with a hidey hole in it and I was like, oh, she likes climbing. This is going to be great. And she won't go on it unless I put her on it. And then she kind of freaks out because she doesn't know how to get down because I don't think she knows how to jump. So
do you know what happened to her before you had her?
I do not. And I don't know if the rescue did either. From what I can tell, like, I think she might have been in someone's home. I don't think she was feral. Just because of how much she enjoys being around people to the point where like she gets sad when I walk away, but she was unfixed before the rescue took her in. So it's unclear. She doesn't seem to have been abused or anything like that. I don't know. So yeah,
I have a cat that's really not very spatially aware. Like he's not very graceful and he does know how to jump, but he doesn't look like, so he'll like jump and then like land in the middle of a pile of stuff and send it skidding instead of being like elegant and delicate. Maybe she'll get there.
Yeah, maybe, but it's gonna be entertaining until then. So it's my fun fact for the week, my Josie update, I guess. All right, let's jump into this episode because I know there are probably a lot of questions or a lot of things to go through because this episode is very business heavy. As a refresher as to exactly what happened in this episode, Blip is at risk of being traded and Ginny is all about making it her business. Meanwhile, Oscar is making the impossible happen with the help of Josh Peck's backseat driving. In flashbacks, we find out the tragic story of Jenny's dad's death.
Was that this episode?
Yes.
I thought that was the last episode. Oh, I've got a whole Oh, got to rearrange my... I watched them together and I got to rearrange the whole thing. Jordan, his name is. Is that right?
Is that the friend's name?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's Jordy. I'm sure it's Jordan, but I think she calls him Jordy.
Okay, sure. Yeah, okay, good. All right, I'm with you. I really thought that was meshed into last week's episode, but okay. No, that would have been way too many subplots last week. Fair enough. Sorry. Carry on.
No, that's interesting. I mean, we can talk about that a little bit up top. No. Just in that, like, you... I forgot that that happened in this episode, too, because it didn't really mesh as well with the main plot as flashbacks have previously.
Yeah, I get it. I kind of get what they did. I think that it was less about, to at least to me, the meshing in this episode. I think I thought this was the one because her mother was... We saw flashbacks with her mother, yeah. It's interesting because the big reveal at the end was the dad was killed by Geordi's dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of like a very side thing to me, and it was more to me about Ginny, like, not having friends or having, like, bad experience with friends and, like, not being able to keep friends and that being kind of how it tied into the episode. So from that side, it kind of made sense. But then I was like, we had that big... you know, dad reveal that kind of didn't really match the theme of the episode, but...
It definitely made me more sympathetic to her very immature behavior regarding Blip's getting traded.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely came from a place of, like, I have no one and I'm pretty desperate to have any kind of support system. Like, I totally get that. I totally get why she wouldn't want him to be traded, and, like, you know, that's the whole plot of the episode, I suppose, you know, why she starts to make it her problem. And now, I'm totally with you about the flashbacks. Now it's all fallen back into the place. I just meshed the two episodes together in my head a little because we had parent stuff last week as well.
Mm-hmm. Let's come back to the flashback then and talk about some of the stuff that kind of gives it more context, because I do like checking in on the flashbacks. But the kind of nuts and bolts of this episode, because this episode is very much about the business side of baseball, we don't see any games being played. We kind of see the team walking or celebrating a win, or we hear about them, like, just finishing a game or kind of walking off the field and all that. But there is there's no actual game being played here except the game of business.
Yeah.
Natalie.
Yeah. Just to be clear that I'm going to be stuck. They are canonically playing games within the episode. We just don't go onto the field with them. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Like, you know, one day, we've won again, you know, but we don't actually see them playing. Okay.
Yeah, I think they've played over the span, I think it was, 3 days or something like that? They played at least 2 or 3 games because we see in the beginning they were celebrating Mike's in the park home run, I believe it was. And I think that's the same one where someone was apologizing to Ginny for, like, taking the win away from her, probably because they gave up a few runs and then the closer would get the win. Or... and then I think they come off.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Why
doesn't everyone win? I don't, like, or, like, she's not the pitcher that threw the last innings, or, like, what does it even mean?
Yeah, it's
if the team won, they won.
The whole team won, and then it's just a special designation to, like, the pitcher is the one who kind of won the game. So the way I believe it works is that, like, the starting pitcher, the main pitcher for the game, they get, like, a win kind of denoted on their record if they help the team win the game. So they're kind of, like, called out specifically for it.
So why did he take it from her then?
I believe how it works, and someone can really correct me if I'm wrong because I don't know for sure, but I believe so. I think that when she exited the game, she most likely had helped the team be ahead of the other team. So the Padres were winning at the time she exited the game. The pitcher who came in after her most likely gave up a few runs. So then the Padres were losing, which then whoever came in to pitch for the Padres after that person, if they were able to help the Padres be in the lead again, they would get the win.
I have no idea.
Fine. Is it common for them to have three pitchers in one game?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it's uncommon for there to really be fewer than three pitchers to be in a single baseball game for one team. And the way, kind of derailing this a little bit, the way that pitchers train, they train either as like the main pitcher, someone who can come in for like a couple innings, or a closer. And the way you train for each of those is slightly different. Like, you have to have endurance to be like the main starting pitcher, because you will want to go, if you can, like 5 or 6 innings. Whereas the ones later in the game that train to come in later in the game are trained more for like sprints. They have to train like to be able to do special kind of pitches, I think, or like just have a different mindset around what they're throwing and when they're throwing it. Because it's less of an endurance and more of like, we have to wrap this up and win it. Baseball. But yes. Okay. So I know that there are a lot of questions about trading in baseball in general. Natalie, you mentioned that you had quite a few questions that you wanted to ask or discuss. So let's talk about those right now before we kind of get into the context of the characters and stuff happening around it. What were some of the questions that you had about this episode, Natalie?
It just seems cruel. Like, sure. Is this normal in all sports?
Yes. As far as I am aware, yes. And for the reasons kind of that Oscar lectures to Ginny later in the episode, albeit he's frustrated, so it comes out a little harshly, but yes. So,
but like, he is right.
Yes.
Like, nothing he says is not true.
Correct. Yeah. So they're paid a lot of money to play these games, and it is cruel in that for the ones that do have families, like, they're uprooted quite a bit, and there's a lot of change that happens for those families that they want. They never get to see.
But I just don't really get like why, like, surely you don't want to send someone that you've trained to another team, because then they can like tell secrets, or like, you know, like it just, you know, I don't know. It seems, I understand it's not something the players want, unless some do want to be traded to other teams. And like, do the new people that come in feel like major, like outsiders? Like, you know, we're seeing this team where everyone's like established and no one wants to leave, but like, how many of them only came in last year because they got swapped around? Like what gives them? I understand that, you know, I guess that it's part of the system, but like, I don't quite understand the benefit of not just like training the people that you have to be good, I guess. Like, it's a bit confusing.
Everybody wants to win.
I don't know. The morale of it seems like it would be like a real problem, like enough of a problem for it to be not beneficial to the game. Obviously, this is just how it works, but
I guess, like, Oscar's speech, I just feel like is so true. I really feel like most people they don't really care where they are as long as they're winning. And, like, they do. The only person I can really think of is, like, Mike Lawson, who I do feel like cares more about being a Padre than he does getting a ring. Do they get a ring too? I keep thinking of like the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
they get rings.
Because Mike Lawson is good enough that he could have left and gone somewhere where he would actually win.
Yeah. And that's like, you know, when I was young, I used to get confused that people played for cities they weren't actually from, you know, that kind of thing. Like that's, you know, that's the level of confusion I got. Or like people, you know, foreign, especially like in the Premier League in the UK for soccer, like people playing from other countries and stuff, and then it going to the Olympics, and then like, oh, now he's playing for Australia against his English teammate, and like, oh, now he knows how to beat him, and like, you know, or like, you know, not that Australia would have, but like, Is there ever any kind of drama with, like, using people's knowledge against each other? I don't know if that makes sense.
Like, using their background and where they're from?
No, like using their secrets, like them knowing, okay, when
how
Mike
they train.
Does this yep. with his fingers, yep. it means Ginny's going to do this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If they have, like, plays and stuff that the team would know about and that, you know, say, for example, Tommy, in this case, RIP Tommy, might take to the Cubs or wherever he's gone.
My biggest question was, why are they doing this trade? Like, why is the trade happening in the middle of the season? Because I do feel like, oh, these people who did spend the whole season learning these people, now they're going somewhere else.
Yeah.
Versus, like, if it happened at the beginning, then you're, like, starting fresh. But
yeah.
So, like, I think I have answers for both. Going back to the Signal ones, I don't know if – so, it's really a pitcher-catcher kind of relationship with, like, the hand signals for what they're going to throw. And actually, I don't know the extent of it, but to figure out what another team's signals are and be able to report back to the dugout, like, what they're throwing and what the movements are for it, to call it, is illegal. There was I think it was the Houston Astros who won the World Series a couple years ago.
I think it was them. Yes, they stole it from the Dodgers.
Exactly.
What do you mean it's illegal to figure out what the other team is doing?
So it would be illegal for someone like Tommy to bring that to another team and use it against them.
Right. So they have, like, an NDA on their past.
Probably. And training. Then I think those things get changed up quite a bit as well.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't stay the same for long. So, and then as far as the trade goes, so this trade happens, and I was looking up for the specific date, this trade happens and the deadline is July 31st. The reason why they do it so late in the season is because at this point in the season, teams really have a good idea as to whether or not they're going to be playing in the postseason or whether or not they're going to be good enough to play in the postseason. And so for teams that have a chance, they're going to want to beef up their roster as much as they can with players that they know are good. And so, and the deadline of the 31st is when players are still, like, if someone is traded after the 31st, that player is not eligible to play in any postseason games, I think, for the rest of that season.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to make it before the 31st, and the teams that have the best chance of playing in the postseason to go and potentially win the World Series, they want to beef up their roster. Whereas teams that maybe aren't in the running, they will want to make trades to be able to better their organization, perhaps for, like, the rest of the season so they can end on a relatively good note or have a good set themselves up to be in a good place for, like, potentially the next season. Or you see Oscar, he's kind of making it both in terms of players as well as trying to cut money from the budget and trying to balance things that way. So that's kind of, I think, why it is so late in the season, is because they are taking the postseason into account.
And they can trade earlier than that.
Yes.
They can be like, actually, we don't want you anymore, or we want someone else.
Yeah,
and you think that people don't really care, like, they'd rather just, obviously, if they're being traded, it means the other team wants them or are willing to accept them. So it's kind of not like a rejection. What if you had an enemy, or, like, what if you were like, I'm not going to play as hard for this team because I don't like this team and I don't want them to win. I don't know. It seems, I'm not competitive. I don't have the mindset for this lifestyle, or, like, what would drive these people at all. So,
or could they be getting paid less money at the team they get traded to than where they are now?
I think their contracts stay.
Yes, in terms, I don't of think pay. So.
Yeah.
I don't so think you, so, because I think some people, like, remember how Oscar was like, okay, you throw in the $300,000 to cover his contract.
Okay.
So I think they have to stay getting paid the same.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, Tommy gets however much a season. Will you take him for this amount? And, you know, maybe sell a more expensive. I don't know. It's okay. I mean, yeah. I get it. I kind of get it. It just seems like obviously it's a morale problem, and the episode is all about the morale problems it begins to cause. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, up until this point, we've seen Oscar really be a good balance of the business side, but also the human side and understanding the team. Mm. And here we kind of see that to the extreme. I don't think he's necessarily off balance, but you can see how those two sides kind of grate against each other, especially with that new guy in the front office.
Him.
Yeah, him. And I don't know the actor's name, but he's an Entourage guy, isn't he?
Kevin Connolly?
Yes, that guy. I think he's like an Entourage guy. I mean, no offense to him. I'm sure he's a wonderful person, but like he has a smarmy face. Yeah, he has a punchable face.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. His face is both punchable and reminds me of Brian from the Backstreet Boys at the same time. So like...
But Brian's face is pretty punchable also, so.
That's fair.
That is fair.
So he kind of took that older guy's place in the front office and is kind of now calling the shots.
In terms of the baseball rules. And is this this man's full-time job, or did he just come in to do this, like, you know, after his big shot developer work? Like, is it his job? I don't really understand like how the ownership is owning a team a job, because the other owners, you know, when we had Maxine and that, like, they seem to like have jobs that are not this. Anyway, I really don't know, but yeah, we want to punch him, and he wants Oscar to do magical things, and he's kind of one of those like hyper positive guys who's probably gonna screw you over. So I don't know, maybe someone else likes him. What's his name? Charlie in the show.
It's more than I remembered because I just...
It is weird that he is like so positive. Like he doesn't, but he's so easily hateable. Like I hate him. But like, what does he actually do? Nothing terrible.
I mean, he kind of makes veiled threats. It's true. He makes a veiled threat at the end.
He greatly implies that Oscar's job depends on this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can just tell when people have that vibe of like crazy positivity, but that's not like from a good and earnest place. It's like he's a hair away from, here's the thing, you know, Parks and Rec, Chris Traeger in Parks and Rec is not like this guy. Right. He's the same kind of positive, but his positivity comes from like a genuine place, and it's also like riddled with anxiety. Whereas this is a guy who's like hyper positive because he kind of knows he's untouchable. He can be as nice as he wants. It's always threatening. This is the enemy. This is the new enemy of society, this kind of man, I think.
Yeah, it's very much, and like calling it positivity doesn't even feel right. I think I like the Chris Traeger comparison. Chris Traeger's positivity is positivity towards other people, or like making them feel positive, whereas this guy's positivity is very much like selfish and ego stroking.
Like his stupid catchphrases that he pretends mean something, but like really is nothing.
Yes, no limit. Exactly.
Anyway, we don't like him, and it's a whole. This is like the Moneyball episode, like the whole thing of like that baseball is all about like maths and statistics and stuff, and that you can predict it that way, and that's what he's got them doing. And it kind of feels like maybe this isn't the way the team usually trades. Like they're going harder because of this guy in this kind of really manic way, especially I suppose because of the budget cut. But it seems like the whole analyst team and, you know, Oscar, that they're playing this in a way that is not the way they usually play it in a trading time. I don't know, maybe that's just me, because he seems pretty overwhelmed by it.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think they probably still have rooms of people, but I think there's added pressure of getting everything they want plus shaving, what is it, like $2 million off of like their budget. I think you're correct in that, Natalie. With everything that Charlie throws at him, I think Oscar does relatively well with balancing everything, even if he doesn't really get a break to celebrate what he did before worrying about the next thing coming down from the front office.
Or get his tooth fixed.
Or get his tooth fixed.
I mean, he does take his analyst to the dentist, which is all very cute. But yeah, he's doing the most, Oscar. He's really doing the most in this episode.
Oscar, I mean, we have all liked Oscar up until this point, and we kind of see him as a good person. Do his actions throughout this episode feed into that or give us a new perspective perhaps on his personality?
Well, Kendra's the one who doesn't like him because she thinks he's secretly evil.
Fair.
It's the higher factor. It's just the higher factor. But I think this might have been the episode that turned it around just because we saw so much of him. He kind of became more of a character in his own right to me. Hiram Lodge kind of got lost a little bit. I think maybe neither, to your question, Danielle, like didn't make me like him more or less, but it did make him, like we saw more of his competence. Like we saw more of him being great at his job. And he never dehumanized anyone. Like he was fully in his right to talk to Ginny the way that he did. Like that's the sport, is like trading people. So definitely didn't make me like him less.
Yeah, I think that's true. Like it's, you know, we have the, you know, the background commentary from all of the television shows talking about the trades. And, you know, there's that one girl who, the host.
Guys, she's real.
I know she's real. I saw it because I'm like, that's not Mike's ex-wife. That's another lady commentator. And what she was saying, she was like, you know, what about the real human beings behind all this? And it's like, yeah. And I feel like Oscar did, the scenes we saw with Oscar were not dehumanizing when he, even when he's talking about trading these people like cattle. I think like it would have been very easy for him to be more clinical. And it's not like he was sitting there considering their feelings and who would be a good match, you know, friendship-wise or anything, but he really didn't feel like, it didn't feel like evil. It didn't feel cruel from him. It just felt like he was doing what they do. I don't know.
It's also like from a practical level, I really do, like, I do think that like you said, Natalie, he considers people's feelings and that this is hard, like having to move your life is hard, but it's also like this is something you've signed up for because you are someone who obviously likes a thrill and wants an exciting life. And if you didn't, then you don't have, no one's forcing you to be making millions of dollars playing a children's game. You could, if you want to stay in San Diego, you could quit baseball and, you know, take your millions and go like open up a restaurant or something, you know, like, so yeah,
it's very much a known aspect of the job. And I think to your point, Oscar displays that very well. Like he understands that, and he never treats the players as anything less than human when it makes sense. But you can tell where his line is the moment Ginny comes storming into his office because Amelia told her so, which in show business makes sense. But in this case, it does not. And the moment Ginny mentions Blip's family, you can tell that's where his line is because it feels like a slap to the face with what he's trying to do.
I can't believe that Amelia was like, you have leverage. You're the most important person. You should go and ask for what you want. She's insane. I mean, she's not. She's not approaching this like a good way. She's not approaching this in a way that works for the industry at all. And I don't know why she's buzzing around constantly there when no one else's agent is constantly there. I understand she's a main character and we're with Ginny and we're following like who takes care of Ginny. But, like, the other guy's agents aren't running in, like, to try and meddle. It's like,
again, it's just so embarrassing and horrible.
Well, perhaps to your earlier point, maybe she's doing that because she doesn't have the industry context.
Like, I mean, I'm sure that she is, but I also think that if you told her the industry context, she'd be like, no, that's stupid. You should do it this way anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting that Ginny never really brings this up, even like, with what comes up later in the episode. Like, I would think Ginny would be mad that she got such bad advice, but like, it just never comes up.
Yeah.
I know that agents are relatively hands-on with their athletes or their clients. Not to Amelia's extent, though. I think it's mostly over the phone. Every once in a while, it'll be in person. But yeah, I think it's interesting. If anything, coming back and rewatching this show, it's the kind of quote unquote adult characters that are feeling really different for me. Like, I'm reacting differently to Mike a little bit, but I'm reacting much differently to Oscar and much differently to Amelia this time around, because I think I have a better understanding of how businesses work. And even though I'm not in this industry, like, you can see the confidence that Oscar has, as well as the confidence that Amelia has. But Amelia, I think, has a little bit more of the fake it till you make it sort of going on, is how it feels to me.
Yeah, I am just really glad that, like, after Oscar's initial kind of like, oh, she's hot, look at Amelia, that didn't go anywhere, because I think that would be very ugly.
Yeah.
Not that I really love her with Mike either, but yeah, I don't know. Arianna, what do you think of Amelia at this point, this time around?
I definitely like her more this time around, because I hated her the first time around, mostly just because I was very immature and saw her as a person in the way of Mike and Jenny's true love. So I definitely like her more, and I sympathize with her a lot more. And like, in this episode, I thought she was so funny when
Elliot.
Like, the thing with Elliot was hilarious.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So embarrassing, but like, it really endeared me to her. Mm. But yeah, she gives Jenny the worst advice.
I feel like she should acknowledge like what she doesn't know, and maybe like talk to some other sports agents, you know, like in terms of like what's appropriate and like, you know, because he could have, you know, like, I think where we thought the episode was going, like newbies, is that like, even though I didn't, because I felt like Blip would be like a main character throughout the whole season because he's like credited as a regular, but that like it would make Oscar like trade him out of spite, you know, like that she would dare think that she could say that, you know. And if that had happened and Ginny would like know, she like, or like probably like in her heart that that's what had happened, and I feel like throughout the whole episode she had that fear. And I don't know, it's just, have we seen her do anything good in terms of Ginny's career now? Because all, either she follows Amelia's advice and it goes badly, or she ignores Amelia's advice, like on the talk show. So I've just got some questions about like when Amelia is going to like get a win here for Ginny.
I mean, I think there's something to be said, the fact that Ginny is where she is today.
Yeah, 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 for sure. But now that she's here, it's kind of like, what now?
I wonder if it's a case of Amelia just not knowing what she doesn't know.
Yeah.
And like getting Ginny to the majors is something that Amelia was well equipped to do, even though she didn't have experience in athletics, but she just doesn't know what she doesn't know about Major League Baseball and the way things work, because it's a very different level of sports and a very just different level of business that I think we're seeing both Amelia and Ginny go through growing pains and figuring out the things that they don't know. And so I don't think that, and Ginny has a lot of support around her in order for her to be able to get those sorts of wins. And perhaps Amelia just doesn't have the same right now.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just confusing to me about, like, I don't know. Part of it is just television structure. Like, obviously, we're not spending time with every other person's agent. But part of it is, like, I feel like I don't hate Amelia, but I feel like she's doing things that are going to make her lose a lot of respect from, like, all the people that she's working with. Like, the people in, you know, who manage the team and eventually Ginny and probably Mike. Like, I feel like she's making calls that are just going to make her look really foolish, and she needs to get a clue there. But I don't really know how that's possible unless she starts asking Mike for help, and then it would just be like Mike was Ginny's agent, and then that would be weird.
I mean, one last bit of context that I think I have to personally remind myself of. They have been at this for less than a month at this point.
Really?
Yeah. They started, I think Brittany clocked it. They started around July 1st, I think. Someone correct me if that was wrong. But, and so
the game,
that first game that Ginny
the
played,
the season,
I think was around there.
Okay.
And then the trade deadline is July 31st.
Okay. I mean, I guess that's quite new. Even more reason not to barge in and do things. But anyway, it's not great.
Yeah, the barging is not great. And Ariana, you have this note in the doc that I completely agree with, of Ginny putting the idea into Oscar's head that Blip should be traded.
Yeah,
Blip's trade is a move that can be made.
It truly is a scene from television that haunts me to this day. Like, when I think of
her like going in and talking to Oscar.
Yes, because, you know, like, in your own life, like, obviously you're the center of your own life and your boss doesn't actually, like, I mean, maybe they care or whatever, but, like, they don't think about you as the protagonist. And so when maybe not everyone, but if you have extreme anxiety, you assume the worst all the time. And so now I always think of this scene and I'm like, oh, I feel like this terrible thing is going to happen. Should I ask my boss about it? And I'm like, no, I can't ask, because then I'll put the idea in their head and then it will happen. Maybe they don't even haven't even thought of this yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't draw attention to it.
It's true. It's true.
No, I'm completely with you there.
Yeah.
I completely understand where Ginny is coming from. But I think that this episode demonstrates just how young Ginny is, or perhaps just how maybe slightly off balance her life has been up to this point, because we have always seen that Blip and Evelyn are very important to Ginny. But I think this episode makes us really understand just how she sees the two of them, and how she sees them as kind of like her
parents.
Really only, yeah, her family, like her really only lifelines. We don't see her brother around. We don't know what's going on with him in present day. She and her mom up until this point were kind of estranged. Her father passed when she was in college or around college age or graduating high school, something like that.
I think so, she found out that she was actually in high school, right?
Like 18,
younger than I expected. Like,
I think so, yeah.
Because they're bonding in kind of her and blonde kid in, you know, just before heading off to college. So like the final year of school aged playing. And yeah, it's like, I mean, I kind of have a lot of questions about, like, I understand that she played with Blip in, like, the minor leagues and stuff, but, like, how long have they been close? Like, Blip and Evelyn have got 7-year-old children. How much older are they than her? Like, she's only 23. Like, what is her – is she, like, this weird halfway between their child and their peer? Like, I don't really get, like, her place in their life and, like, how they became – so close, and when, you know, and why they are like BFFs. If it's just sort of something that's become closer because Ginny moved there, like, oh, someone I knew well, and at a point, and, you know, we haven't been together for ages, but now we're back and we're, you know, we're tightening up again, or whether, you know, she had any friends before that between Jordan and these two. It is quite dependent, and I mean, I understand not wanting to lose, like, literally the only person that you hang out with in your life, or the most trusted person, but I don't know. It did start getting to me how she was, like, really making it about her, and I'm kind of glad that Blip, like, snapped and yelled at her about it, to be honest, like, as well.
Yeah, I was really, I was just so embarrassed for her. I think it does highlight how young she is. Like, it's the night before trading, and, like, Blip and Evelyn are so stressed out, and she's like, can I come stay with you? Because I'm stressed out. Like, oh, Ginny.
Yeah, I'm stressed out because you might get traded, and how that's going to make me feel is not great. Because
I might have to make new friends.
Yeah.
I think this episode is a really great reminder of just how young she is. And it puts other things into perspective. Like, there are so many expectations and hopes and responsibilities put on her shoulders. And in thinking of her as a professional ball player, it makes sense. But in thinking of her as a, I mean, insecure 23-year-old, it's kind of like, it's very eye-opening, I think. And I, as much as I cringed pretty much every time she was on screen this episode, I respect the fact that, like, the show made me cringe, if that makes sense.
I think it also made me realize, though, that she is, in a lot of ways, even emotionally younger than 23 because of how she's lived her life.
Absolutely.
Following high school, really all she's done is play baseball. And when she plays baseball, she's kind of like putting on this front. And as we've seen, like, so many of these guys, like, repress their feelings and just don't, like the rules are not the same as what we learn socially in real life interacting with people. So yeah, it just seems like she is maybe not as emotionally mature as many 23-year-olds would be.
And I mean, speaking of kind of emotionally mature, at least around the trades, we have a couple examples of people who kind of agree that it's difficult, but kind of accept it as something that happens. So there's a ball player that I don't think we've really seen or given a name to until this episode, Butch. And, like, he understands that this is part of the job. You can tell he's not very happy about the fact that, like, he could be traded, but he keeps a backpack with him and he gets traded away.
Do they have to go so far? Presumably their family doesn't have to go that fast. It's just like, we're in the game right now.
Because they have a game that night.
Yeah.
So he has, like, to be ready to go play the game that night.
Or the other team with people he's never met before, or might have met but had, like, a rivalry with, or, like, it's very stressful.
Yes. And that's why he's talking about, like, you don't want to travel without having anything ready to go with you. But yeah, so he's relatively mature and it kind of works out for him. He gets traded away and then traded back just with the different deals that were made. And then someone who we thought was kind of secure, who was also kind of nervous, was Tommy. And we see Tommy get traded away. And I mean, Ginny doesn't get to say goodbye, and kind of neither do we as an audience. And I will say that Tommy is someone who kind of has grown on me the last two episodes. And I forgot that this happened with him. Ariana, did you remember this at all?
I don't know. I don't know. I was kind of living in the moment. Yeah. No, I was bummed. I like Tommy. I feel like I did. Well, I don't know. I really don't know. Yeah, I like Tommy. And I thought it was sweet that when he was sad, he turned to Ginny. He was like, let's go for a jog.
Yeah.
Come on, bro.
It was just starting to be like a point where he could be, you know, a new good friend. And
poor Tommy.
I wonder if Ginny would end up being like the emotional support line for almost every player, because like they can't open up to the other guys. They're like, oh, I can open up to this girl. Like, I'll tell her my problems. I feel like that would end up being her role.
Very annoying.
Yep.
I'd hate that. I mean, the mature ones don't need it. Like, you don't see... I mean, he had a no trade clause, so I guess he figured he was fine. But like, Mike Lawson was pretty mature about the whole thing. Tried to rally his guys and keep them calm while also not hide the fact that this was something that was happening. So I guess that's good. But yeah, let's talk about Mike a little bit, because instead of involving him in all of the trade hoopla, because he had that clause where he's not allowed to be traded, we don't see him in terms of the team all that much this episode. It's instead in terms of his, I guess, relationship with Amelia. While I enjoy the two of them together, I didn't necessarily enjoy seeing this sort of drama between the two of them. And I think part of that is maybe because their appeal to me has kind of worn off. I'm not sure how... Natalie, I know you said that you're not a huge fan of them together. Did this episode make it better or worse, the way that you feel about the two?
About...
Mike and Amelia.
I don't know, honestly. Like, it's... I can't really... I just feel like
they're struggling to give her self-respect. He's fine. He's all well and, you know, he's all willing to make it, you know, totally fine. Like, you know, either not a big deal or a big deal, or like, you know, he, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And she's reacting in some really erratic ways, I think. And you know, he made that comment, and it wasn't a great comment about the groupie on groupie crime. Like, you know, clearly women who've liked him or, you know, tried to hook up with him have seen other women's car there and trashed them. It wasn't a great line, but I don't know. It's not my favorite. Neither of them are particularly emotionally honest with themselves, and therefore not with each other either. But I think Mike wears his emotional dishonesty a bit better, and Amelia's is a bit ridiculous to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm being internally misogynistic. I don't know. I just, her behavior just kind of stresses me out. She just needs to own it in some way. I don't know.
I think it might help if they didn't only show us Mike and Amelia like in the morning, like after they've already hooked up. Like, what we've seen of Mike and Ginny is like them flirting, like them being cute. Whereas like with Mike and Amelia, we only see it after, like we never see the build up or them like coming together, which I think is like what like a ship is made of, like those moments. And we haven't seen any of them. So like
wow, a mouth guard.
Yeah. I guess we got like just a little bit of cuteness in this episode. Like that was a star, but I think we need a lot more of that if we actually want to like take them seriously.
Yeah, it's a lot of fade to blacks. It's a lot of like, oh, I saw you in the bar with your computer, and then oh, the next episode they have hooked up. You know, you're not really getting any like idea of like why they should spend time together, you know. So that's probably true.
Yeah, and like, or to kind of Kendra's point, it's not even a fade to black. It's kind of like a fade from black, or like a fade in rather than a fade out. Yeah, I never thought about it like that. That's a good point. And I did like the mouth guard part, because to me that's kind of like, we're adults. We're making a choice to do this together, to spend time together. This isn't an embarrassing thing or something that I should be embarrassed about. Like, I liked that part. And I liked the point where like Mike buys her a mouth guard because he would like her company. But yeah, there's no context for that cuteness, which makes that gesture fall really flat here.
And I think for me, another thing that I've just sort of been able to put a word on about it is if there's, I know they tell, she tells Ginny in the end, which is, you know, whatever, clearly it's not all fun games for Ginny. But, and yeah, Ginny, they keep going back to this idea that, you know, Ginny will be hurt, not because it's like romantic competition, but because of like hero worship. Which is kind of childish, but also valid. But also, the fact that they keep insisting there's nothing wrong with what we're doing, but they feel like there's something wrong with what they're doing about not telling Ginny, like, it does, it's giving us reason to believe that it's wrong for them to be together. You know, they're literally telling us, you know, and the show is showing us, you know, oh, this, them being together is a problem for our protagonist, and we can't tell her, we have to keep it a secret, and then we tell her, and then, you know, she clearly has a problem with it that we'll find out next week how she responds. But I think that's also not on their side, that the show is both telling and showing us that this is, like, being played as something that will be a problem for the protagonist. I don't know if anyone else feels like that, but I think the way it's framed is kind of not on their side.
Yeah, there's a lot of rationalizing. I think we've seen them rationalizing their relationship more than we've seen them trying to get to know each other.
Yeah.
And between Amelia's constant, like, explaining, I guess, to Elliot, to the point where when Amelia was telling Ginny, or kind of confessing to Ginny what has been going on, it felt almost like the more she talked about it and the more she tried to rationalize it to Ginny, after Ginny kept saying, like, hey, it's okay, like, drop it, leave it alone, it's okay, the worse, oh my gosh, that made her that face feel.
Her, yeah, face too, it was so obvious, like the way she went up to her, it was just so, like, you could feel how uncomfortable she was. Like, that's not how she carries herself in life. Like, you could tell that she knew this was bad.
Yeah. And I think just constantly harping on it makes it worse. I've had a situation like that relatively recently, and it's like, I felt one way, and then the person kept digging and chipping, and I was like, oh no, maybe I feel the other way. Besides the fact that Amelia tells this to Ginny before a game. And I was like, why would you do this before a game? You're supposed to be her agent first and foremost. I would think that this would be something that you would not want to distract your client when your client needs to perform well to, I mean, make you money. It was just terrible timing all around, and just the constant harping was not a good thing.
I think one very positive thing to come out of this story in this episode was how quickly Blip figured out exactly what Mike was doing, which was, yes, amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. Just because you can see how well Blip knows both Ginny and Mike. Like, he's no fool. Like, he knows how his friend reacts to things. And I really enjoyed him kind of talking through that.
Mm-hmm. Adorable.
It was.
I did think it was a little, I thought it was a little strange how quickly he came to the conclusion. Like, it was fun, but it was strange. Like, him going, it's not Ginny, makes sense, because that is, like, the worst thing that could happen in to ruin Mike's life.
Mm-hmm.
But why would he assume it's Ginny adjacent unless he's already feeling vibes between them? So, I don't know. It was a stretch, but he got there.
Yeah. I agree it was a stretch, but I think at the same time, like, if there was anything for that Mike would be kind of ashamed about, or at least to the point where, like, he wouldn't want to tell Blip, it would have to be something mutual, maybe, or, like, something new because they've been around each other for so long. But it was pretty quick, but it was, they did a good job for it being that quick. We've seen kind of how Ginny reacts to Amelia telling her the news. And I mean, I don't think it's any secret that may not work out well for both of them moving forward. But then after we see Amelia tell her the news, Ginny ignores a phone call from Mike, who until this point has been both her mentor and a very close friend. How do you see this changing their relationship? We've kind of gone back and forth on like what the relationship actually is, but is it more of like Ginny feeling it as a friend betrayal, or more of like Ginny seeing her idol or like some crush that she might have still been harboring about this athlete she's looked up to for forever kind of come off the market in a very real way for her?
I would say that her ignoring that phone call kind of confirms that she has feelings for Mike on a deeper level. If we didn't just see an entire episode of her being like too attached to her friends in an immature way. Mm-hmm. So that could be setting the stage for her being like, oh, you're my friend, you didn't tell me. But I wouldn't believe that it's because she has feelings for him.
I can see it as, I don't want someone that I introduced you to be closer to you than I am, whether that's as a friend or more. As a friend, that's a problem for some people in a very serious way, that some people are really happy to like set up a friend and be like, oh, you too, I love you both, you should get married, yay, and now you love each other both more than you love me. Some people have real problems with, I'm the link and you now have a connection that's not through me. That's a major problem for some people in some friendships. And I think that, like, you know, it could be that. It could be just, you know, a trust thing. Like, you know, Mike's been supporting her really well the past few weeks and he didn't tell her. You know, it could be like, why didn't you tell me? I'm pissed that you didn't tell me. It could be definite either kind of crush that she has to let go of or actual feelings. I really can see a lot of options.
If she has real feelings, then I think everything she feels about this for me will feel justified. Like if she's angry or whatever, but if she's at least pretending that she doesn't, if she's claiming it's just because she, like you said, Natalie, it's two people that are too close to her, then obviously it's annoying. It's very annoying for her, but I think it's something she needs to get over. That's the mature thing to do. Like, you can't control other people's lives.
I think that a lot of this episode saw Ginny being extremely protagonist-y and everyone else reminding her that she's not the protagonist of everyone else's life. With Oscar, with Blip and Evelyn, and now with this. It's constant Ginny's feelings and then people being like, things exist outside your feelings, kind of like that. There was that repeated pattern for me of Ginny acting like she is the center of the universe. And I don't mean that to sound as harsh as it does, but like her kind of really focusing on her. And I think it's more a sign that she actually has never, you know, for reasons that we've actually seen, like with her father and, you know, not really doing very well making friends or having relationships, that she, like, she literally, despite being a team sport player and wanting to be a good teammate, she's actually not, like, a really good team player, doesn't play well with others in terms of, like, social situations. She really is kind of self kind of inward and the people in her life are usually about supporting her in some way. And yeah, she just hasn't really been taught to like think about other people's feelings, I think, because I think her father discouraged that to an extreme degree and made her very self-centered in the most literal way you could say that, like not necessarily in an egotistical way. And so we're just seeing like a lot of like Ginny realizing that like her feelings on the matter are maybe like not the most important thing objectively in the scheme of what's happening in her life.
I do want to say something really positive about her father in this episode though, because I thought it was, I feel like we saw such a great side of him in this flashback.
Yeah, I agree.
Why his children would love him. Like we got to see that he, like, he is a very present parent, and not only that, but like, I really admired the way that he talked to Jordy about his dad and how he never put down Jordy's dad in front of Jordy. And like, if Jordy was like, I'm sorry, he's like, no, I understand, he's a busy man. And like, he kept saying that he's a busy man. And I thought that was really sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to agree with that as well. Cause I think that is something that's an aspect of her dad that I haven't remembered about this show. Like, I remembered the hurting the brother until Ginny could throw a strike, or just like the drill sergeant kind of dad. But I was pleasantly surprised when I was reminded of just this other side of him, the more like parental, paternal kind of side, the softer side.
Yeah, like his kids never had to wonder if he would show up for them. That like, he's the kind of parent that, you know, like if they got in trouble, he would be there for them.
Yeah. And I think he, you know, he is, you know, not necessarily, you know, he's not necessarily pitting Ginny against the world or like restricting her from having friends or anything. But he clearly thinks like all parents should be as dedicated to their child as he is to his child, for better or worse. And he was very kind in this episode, which obviously makes the death like even worse. I mean, it's, you know, we didn't really get a full breakdown. We just got like, you know, the looks from the bicycle. We didn't really get a full breakdown of like how Ginny, if they ever, you know, and Jordan spoke after it, like if he was like, you know, if she kind of had a you know, I don't want to see you again, like it's too painful, or you know, they moved away, you know, was the father getting taken into prison, he, you know, what is this kid's life now, you know, basically. I'd kind of like to see him again. I doubt that we will, but
yeah. And like who, like you were saying, like who was the one who called off the friendship? Obviously, yeah. It's a terrible situation, and like there is an assumption of who might have, but
yeah,
I think it would have been interesting to know. I think going back to a previous point of yours, Natalie, I admittedly didn't care for this episode too much beyond the stuff with Oscar. But I think thinking of it in terms of Ginny realizing or being constantly reminded that she's not the protagonist, I think that works better for me as an episode than Ginny kind of like taking us through different friendships that we have, because there are so many holes, or there just isn't as strong of a through line, because we don't get that development as much in the flashbacks. Like, again, we see them being friends kind of, but I don't have a feeling for what their friendship dynamic was like. And so like those flashbacks didn't resonate with me in the way that I think they were intended around that friendship.
I mean, I'm biased because he read really queer to me, and I would have really liked to explore that. But yes. But aside from that, yeah, I mean, I doubt we'll see him again. Like, you know, and we saw, you know, her history with the catcher from the other team. You know, we won't see him again, I assume. Like, you know, maybe these are things that would have come up more in later seasons if they'd got more of 10 episodes, you know, like that we would catch up with these people in a significant way. But it is kind of just like a, yeah, greatest hits of Ginny's past without it being like a massive, massive consequence, like it, in her actual life. I mean, huge consequences, obviously, like with her father and stuff, but like not like we're meeting these people, but we're not like developing that anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I think with more time, they might have been able to do more of that. Admittedly, I don't remember how the rest of the season plays out. But it'll
I'm just going to assume that they don't come up again. Like they might, I don't know. I guess we got the mention in this week's episode, you know, just in passing. I think Amelia mentioned to Elliot, like, you know, any news about the pictures. I assume he means the, like, they mean the, like, sexy pictures that Trevor warned her about in previous episodes, so maybe it will come up again. But yeah, I feel like the structure reminds me of the flashbacks, you know, trying to impart a message about like what her behavior is like today. It kind of reminds me of a bit like a procedural, like Cold Case or Touched by an Angel or something. I don't know. There's a vibe of the flashbacks that's, I guess, not like quite landing as much. Like I said before, I love flashbacks, but they don't really seem to like be giving us information beyond the context of like this episode. It feels a bit disconnected. The flashbacks aren't part of a, they are part of a whole because it's her life, but they don't feel like part of a whole. They don't feel like the whole story is like, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I think that so far the season has felt very segmented. It's not felt like really one story. It's felt like almost like a procedural about baseball, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. It serves the episode that it's in.
Yeah.
And like and that aspect, that aspect of Jimmy's character that it's exploring.
Ticking off the box that week, yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily carry over as strongly as perhaps it should.
Yeah, I think that is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, something still to watch as we keep going. Because I can't remember exactly, but I don't think the flashbacks are going away anytime soon. My last thing to kind of wrap up this episode, Natalie, you were touching on characters that are kind of here for an episode and then disappear. And one character in this episode that we didn't really talk about a lot, but I know there was a little bit of interest at the end of last week that was going to be on this episode was Josh Peck.
Mm.
And curious as to whether people enjoyed seeing him in this role and if it's a character that we would like to see pop up again.
It was a pretty blatant copy of Jonah Hill from Moneyball, which they even alluded to, which I thought was kind of weird. I like seeing Josh Peck like goofier, but I don't know. I also don't really think we saw what he had to offer. Like we saw Oscar liking him more and more, but like I don't really know why. Like I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't really like have the familiarity with him. I know like his existence of teen acting, but like it's not something I was a part of. But it to me it just vibed like, you know, Oscar throughout the whole episode, and like my favorite quote at the it was actually about him. Like it was the when he at the end, you know, Oscar's like, that's the Ross I like, to Rhonda. But it just kind of vibes like, you know, yeah, he got the wrong kid, you know, he didn't get the analyst he wanted, he got the one that was there as like a some sort of nepotism favor, but he leveled up and he worked well with Oscar, and you know he you know managed to get the good vibes and get the job done, and so now he's Oscar's favorite. And it just kind of spoke to me of a story of like how bullshit any actual qualifications or talent can be in like ridiculously high earning money industries. Like sometimes it's just like, I've taken a shine to you and therefore you're going to be very rich and successful. And it doesn't actually matter what you did.
That is truly what it felt like, because again, I love Josh Peck and I love this character because there is something like weirdly endearing about him, even though I don't think he actually like does anything helpful. Does he? Like
he makes the phone calls. He kind of
does some basic math at the end, but
he's just the one that got in with Oscar and
he was literally like a friend of Maxine. His parents were a friend of a Maxine, and like it was so funny when he's like, oh, did you go to MIT or Yale? And he's like, Camarillo Junior College.
Yeah, he was there and he didn't fuck up, and white men can become very rich and successful.
That is how it happens.
And not fucking up, like just by
doing the bare minimum.
Good vibes to someone more important, and that's it. And I don't necessarily begrudge him that, because it's like, you know, he's
a sweet man.
He tried hard and he came up with a good answer, but like it just I don't know. It was just, I really enjoyed him, but it was very strange. You know, sorry, MIT Josh, that you have like a hugely like taxing statistics degree that MIT Ross, sorry, not Josh, that you are not, getting any credit for. But yeah, I guess he comes up with a good answer. And it could also be how someone with not very many prospects, except for nepotism, can actually like learn things and do things when they're given a chance, I guess.
Yes, like, I want to clarify that, like, I'm not making fun of Camarillo Junior College. If it had been, like, just some kid off the street who was coming from Camarillo Junior College, then I feel like this would be such an uplifting story because it's like, oh, look, like, somebody who didn't have a lot of money and couldn't afford to go to Yale actually is very smart, and if they just had the resources, then they would be able to prove that they're just as smart. But no, this is somebody who had all of the resources, but still, parents could not pay for him to get into Yale. Like, if he was so dumb, his parents, with all their money, couldn't not buy a library to get him into Yale.
But he turned out okay because he saved them $2 million. All right, cool. I mean, that was the last thing that I wanted to touch on for this episode because, I mean, I used to be a big Drake and Josh fan, so I always love seeing him come around.
Cute. I think it was cute.
Yeah. Was there anything else about this episode that we didn't touch on that anyone wanted to bring up or discuss or ask questions about?
Oh, I mean, I just, what was the better yelling at Ginny? Blip yelling at Ginny or Oscar yelling at Ginny?
Oh, Oscar yelling at Ginny for sure. Because when Blip yelled at her, like, my heart broke. And also I was just like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. And it was too real. And when Oscar yelled at her, it was a little bit like why are you complaining? You're rich.
Do we know what she's getting paid? Did we see her, if you screen capped, like, the ranking of salary? Also, like, I know this happens in films and, like, everywhere where you get ridiculously paid people, but, like, the difference between someone making, like, $1 million and $8 million, like, that's a huge difference to be, like, playing on the team where, like, everyone's a teammate, you know? It's kind of like, I would vibe badly about that too. I know that's how things work, but, yeah.
Well, if you do think of anything, let's talk about it next week. And as always, please bring more questions about the business of baseball or how the game is played, and I will do my best to answer them for you. But let's wrap up for this episode with our favorite scenes and our favorite lines. My favorite scene was actually towards the very beginning of the episode. It was when Mike was giving a speech to the team. He had told them all to put their phones away, and he was like, hyping them up and trying to get them into a positive headspace. Everyone was feeling good for like 2 seconds until Oscar walks through the locker room and just ruins everything. And I don't know why exactly I loved it so much, but I do know that a big part of it was the fact that, like, I enjoy Mike's team speeches and I can see why he's the team captain. So that was my favorite scene. Kendra, do you want to give us your favorite scene?
Sure. I really liked Tommy and Ginny running together in this episode. Kind of liked how their friendship was growing until now it's over. But it was still my favorite.
Because they'll never see each other ever, ever again.
No, definitely not.
Nope. Ariana, your favorite scene?
I feel like my favorite scene is actually like when Oscar makes it in on time, like he gets under the $2 million and everyone's like, yeah. And I was like, I didn't understand anything that just happened, but I feel so pumped. But I do want to give an honorable mention to Elliot's face when he finds out that Mike and Amelia are hooking up. It's great.
It's priceless. That's a good one. Good choice. Thank you very much. Natalie, your favorite scene.
Yeah, I liked Elliot's fantasy baseball, like, credits to Ginny and how he talked her through it. Like, why is no one asking him to help? Like, why is Amelia not asking him about baseball? But I really loved Oscar yelling at Ginny, as we've discussed. But I really, really, really loved Oscar when he says that she's cursed his tooth, and because now he does really have a tooth abscess.
Yeah, I love that. And like the intro where you have the scenes from previous weeks, they make a big deal about her saying that he has an abscess tooth.
Yeah, very, very funny. She's adorable. And yeah, he apparently, you know, it karma came to get him with his tooth abscess. And then he got to take Josh Peck to the dentist. So yeah, Oscar, he was just a very good MVP in this episode.
Agreed. Very much so. And then in terms of favorite lines, my favorite line admittedly was one that Ariana had, but my second favorite line is, your wife just made a move on Words with Friends. I need to change my alerts. When Ginny and Blip were like trying to ignore the trade deal, and then her phone pings. Made me laugh. Kendra, your favorite line, please.
I think I need a root canal, that Oscar said after it all was said and done. So I think he's officially past the Hiram Lodge factor. You got my favorite quote.
Yes. Progress. Love it. Ariana, your favorite quote for this week, please.
Mine was when Blip finally gets mad at Ginny and tells her, I just don't have it in me to make you feel okay.
Mm-hmm.
So real.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the perfect quote to kind of sum up this whole episode.
Mm-hmm.
That's so great. Great choice. And Natalie, your favorite line?
Mine was after the big success of all of the trading and they come in having achieved what they want to achieve, he points at Josh Peck and says, that's the Ross I like. And then Josh Peck looks very happy.
I like that one too. All right. Well, those are our favorite scenes, our favorite lines, and basically what we thought about this episode, but we want to hear what you have to say. So please get in contact with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. And if you are so inclined, we would love it if you would leave us a review on iTunes, even just leaving us a 5-star review, few clicks of your, I don't know, thumb, forefinger, whatever on your phone, would really help us. It would help people find us and help us grow our podcast and reach more people. And yeah, we would love you forever. And as always, we do have an incentive for those who would please rate us 5 stars on iTunes. So this week, if you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will be the Drake to your Josh. And I feel like that would be pretty neat.
It would be, but I did realize I really feel like Karen is more of a Josh. Like, she's the responsible one.
She is, but, like, sometimes I feel like she can cut loose.
She has a little Drake in her.
That's why I was, like, reading that slowly because I was really trying to think about it. And I could see it. I could see it. But if you want a Josh to your Drake, I'm sure she would be more than happy to do that instead. Whatever you want, you got it. And then, as always, we would love it if you would join us on Facebook. We love having discussions over there of pitch as well as previous shows that we've done. So you can find us on Facebook. Just look for Rewatchables Rewinders. If you find a Facebook group that has Ginny at the cover photo, you know you are at the right place. In terms of listener feedback, we have a couple of pieces for you guys this week. Kendra, would you please take this tweet for us?
Sure. We have a tweet from Kevin Brown @over_short on Twitter. It says, I love pitch, but one thing it didn't do well was represent the business of baseball. Ginny, after years in the minors, would have been to spring training several times and would have at least met all the other players on the team and likely played with many of them in the minors. Always good to have more inside baseball info.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's never occurred to me because I know nothing about baseball, but now that he says it, it makes total sense.
Yes.
This is the most logical thing.
Yes. Yes, it is. And I feel like I knew this at some point, but it just didn't register. So thank you, Kevin, for pointing it out. We really appreciate it. And then we actually have an email this week as well, and it is lovely, and it's from a listener who would prefer to stay anonymous, but I wanted to have it read aloud on our podcast because it's wonderful. Ariana, would you mind taking this email?
Sure. Hi, Rewatchable. Now that you're back with new eps, I just thought I'd finally write in and say how much this podcast means to me. Long ago, I discovered the Avatar and Korra podcast at a time when I'd first started college, and one of my classes was unbearably stressful. Listening to the podcast made working for hours on end actually enjoyable. Every host contributed something great, presented a deeper look at the shows I grew up with, and often made me laugh out loud. Dead Suki? The Pema jokes? Zutara? Boomy? I'm currently rewatching Avatar with my family, and it keeps reminding me of rewatchable references. Haha. Not only that, but every semester or two, when things would get tough, I'd re-listen to the whole podcast. It's still just as amusing and enlightening every time I listen. Any thoughts on the upcoming live-action Atla? Thanks for providing me with joy when things were tough. Hope you all are safe at this time. Very, very sweet email. It makes me happy and brings back great memories.
I don't understand the references, but I love this email anyway. I'm so glad that we were able to help you get through unbearably stressful classes. And I'm so glad that you bring us with you or just listen to us. It's really great. And thank you for sharing that. I personally don't have any thoughts on the upcoming live action Atla because I still have yet to see the animated Atla. Are we excited about this?
It can't be worse than the movie.
Fair. I have heard that.
It literally can't be. But I don't think the series needs to be redone. It could be cool to see, like, how we, you know, can do CGI, you know, platypus bears and bending and stuff, I guess. But I think the series holds up on its own. You know, the more involved the original creators are, the better. So I guess we'll see.
I feel like I would rather have, like, I would be very into a live action Atla adjacent show, like a show in the world.
In the universe.
That was live action. But I
like
I
a Kyoshi in the past or like.
Yeah, or even like a future Avatar or like somebody, even just Avatar adjacent. Mm-hmm. Or like, oh, you know what I would really love? I would really love getting to see Aang and his friends, the Aang gang,
in there. As adults.
As adults. That would be great. So and I want to see all the drama.
Aang and Korra. Like when Aang is the full-fledged adult Avatar and Zuko is the Fire Lord. And they are.
Yes. Yes. Like, and you know, Korra and Zuko. I mean, not Korra and Zuko. Katara and Zuko are having their
had an affair and had Kaya.
That's what I would like. But as far as like remaking the cartoon, I just feel like the cartoon is so like that was just the perfect format for it. Mm. And it's just such a like one of those rare perfect shows, except for the ending, obviously, because Zutara forever.
I don't agree with Zutara forever, mainly because I started watching it again and I still am like, I cannot believe Katara's arrogance. But, yeah, I just don't see how a live-action one would help anyone. I guess, like, it would be nice to see how well it's done, like, visually. But story-wise, it's good as it is, and we don't need to do it again. And it's really good for children to watch this show and learn how to be, like, productive members of society, you know, and, like, have empathy and kindness and morals. And I don't think a live-action show would be directed at children. I think it's important that this show is directed at children but also adults. So, I don't know. I mean, I know that the creators are pretty serious about it and that, you know, obviously they wrote the story and they really, you know, they really believe in this universe. Like they when they were making it, visualized it as real as you or I. And, you know, the format that they had was animated. And if they're heavily involved, then I think that, you know, it could be good. But I think I'd rather the adult in between show as well. They've been very firm about, like, the cultural appropriation in the
terrible film and how much they hated it and how much they will not be casting, like, white people to play a race based on, like, Inuit Americans, or white people to play a race based on, like, Tibetan monks and stuff. So, you know, at least we can hope for that.
I don't know what any of that means.
It's okay.
But I do want to watch it at some point.
It's a great show. It's coming to Netflix in America in May. It's currently on Netflix in Australia, but I also have the DVDs, but it's going to come back to Netflix in May. So great quarantine watch for anyone who wants to, like, feel good and, like, see some bright colors and good stories that are not depressing.
Awesome. Something to look out for. All right. Well, before we wrap up this week, it is now time to give predictions for the next episode. It's episode 6 called Wear It. And so please, Fisher's Forecasts and Kendra's Creeping Suspicions, take it away, you guys.
Wear It's a tough one. They wear jerseys. I want to think it's, like, in a sexy way that they're saying wear it. Oh. So that would be fun. My only prediction is that there's going to be some fallout from what Ginny just learned about Amelia and Mike. And hopefully there's a cute Mike and Ginny combo to follow.
To me, I'm hearing it as, like, a forceful wear it. Like, wear this thing that you don't want to wear. Like, either, like, a dress, even though Ginny's not unfeminine, she doesn't have a problem with that. Or, like, you know, maybe Amelia scores her, like, a lingerie contract to, like, make millions and millions of dollars, and she's like, no, and Amelia's like, do it. It feels to me like someone's being forced to wear something as an order. So some sort of clothing plot, and yeah, I guess the Ginny and Mike might talk about banging Amelia.
I feel like that might be the final nail in Amelia's coffin if she signs Ginny up for a lingerie contract.
I don't know, or like something, or if they try to make her wear like a cutesy, like, girls' baseball uniform instead of, I don't know, something, something like that she doesn't want to wear, that she has to wear.
They just go a league of her own.
I mean, that would be nice, you know, that would be very weird, or maybe if all the men wore that as well.
I would be down for that. I hope that prediction comes true. All right. Well, that's it for us this week. We will be back next week to discuss episode 6, Wear It. But until that time, until we meet again, I'm Danielle.
I'm Kendra.
I'm Mariana.
And I'm Natalie.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.